The sound isn't what you expect. It isn't a crack. It isn't a bang. It's a low, guttural growl that starts in the soles of your feet and moves up through your shins, into your chest, until your very teeth are vibrating in their sockets. Imagine you are lying in bed. It's 5:20 in the morning. The air is cold, but you're warm under a heavy wool blanket in your apartment on the Via Garibaldi. Outside, the world is that deep, bruised purple of the hour before dawn. Then, the floor beneath your bed simply stops being solid. The stone walls of your bedroom don't just fall, they explode inward. The ceiling, heavy with ornate plaster and history, becomes a guillotine. You try to scream, but the air is suddenly replaced by a thick, chalky white powder. It's the pulverized remains of your home. You are falling. You aren't running. You aren't jumping. The world has dissolved, and you are being swallowed by the very earth you trusted to hold you up. And then, silence. A silence so heavy it feels like a physical weight. You are pinned. You can't move your left arm. You can't see. You can only taste the grit of lime and centuries-old mortar on your tongue. Somewhere in the distance, through the ringing in your ears, you hear the sea. But the sea sounds wrong. It sounds like it's coming for you. Rewind Daily. I'm Marcus Webb, historian and storyteller. December 28, 1908. Today we're standing on the edge of the sickle-shaped harbor of Messina, Sicily. It was once called the Zankel, the jewel of the Mediterranean, a place of bergamot orange groves and grand palazzos. But in the span of 37 seconds, it became a tomb for 80,000 people. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? We build our lives, our cities, and our legacies on the assumption that the ground is a constant. We call it terra firma. But what happens to our souls when the firmament proves to be a lie? What do we do when the very thing that supports us turns into our executioner? To understand the horror of that Monday morning, you have to understand what Messina was on Sunday night. It's the Christmas season. The city is glowing. The Corso Vittorio Emanuele is packed with people in their holiday best. Messina is a gateway, a bridge between the East and the West. It's wealthy, it's vibrant, and it is incredibly beautiful. That evening, the Teatro Vittorio Emanuele is sold out. They're performing Verdi's Aida. Think about that. The soaring trumpets, the costumes, the elite of Sicilian society gathered under gaslight, cheering for a story of ancient Egypt, completely unaware that their own civilization is hours away from a collapse more total than any pharaoh's. After the opera, the crowd spill out into the night. They head to the cafes for espresso and cannoli. There's a slight chill in the air. A sickly calm, some survivors would later say. The animals know. The dogs in the street are howling, a restless, mournful sound that the locals ignore. The horses in the stables are kicking at their stalls. We always look back and see the signs, don't we? We want to believe the world warns us before it breaks. But for the people of Messina, there was just the sleep of the exhausted. They went to bed dreaming of the new year. Below them, 2 miles beneath the bed of the Stretto di Messina, two massive tectonic plates, the African and the Eurasian, had been grinding against each other for millennia. They'd been locked in a deadly embrace, building up tension, centimeter by agonizing centimeter. At 5:20 a.m., the rock finally snaps. It starts with a vertical jolt, not a side-to-side shake, but a punch from below. This is what engineers call vertical acceleration. It's powerful enough to throw people out of their beds and through windows. In those first 10 seconds, the palazzetta, the magnificent curtain of four-story buildings that lined the harbor like a crown, simply buckles. These were massive stone structures, built to last forever. They collapsed into the streets, turning the grand boulevards into canyons of jagged rock. Then comes the horizontal shaking, long rhythmic waves that turn the soil into liquid. This is liquefaction. The ground literally loses its ability to support weight. Buildings don't just fall, they sink. Imagine the darkness. The power lines are cut instantly, the gas mains rupture, and small fires begin to lick at the ruins. If you survived the initial collapse, you are now in a world of gray. A thick, suffocating cloud of dust hangs over the city, so dense that even when the sun begins to rise, it stays dark. You hear the screams. They are coming from under your feet. They are coming from the piles of stone that used to be the house next door. But you can't look for help yet, because the sea is leaving. On the docks, the few sailors who weren't killed by falling cranes look out at the harbor and see something terrifying. The water is retreating. It's pulling back toward the center of the strait, exposing the muddy bottom, the shipwrecks of old wars, the flopping fish. It's a vacuum. Nature is drawing a deep breath, and then the wave comes. It's not one wave, but three. The first is nearly 40 feet high. It hits the ruined harbor with the force of 1,000 freight trains. It picks up the steamships and the fishing boats and hurls them into the city, over the seawall, into the second stories of the buildings that are still. The water rushes into the ruins, drowning the people who were trapped in their cellars, people who might have survived the earthquake if they had only been given a chance to breathe. Let's go back to that person in the rubble. Let's say it's you. You are pinned under a mahogany beam. Your legs are numb. You can hear your sister calling out from somewhere to your right, but her voice is getting weaker. You see a sliver of light. It's the sun, trying to pierce through the dust. You wait for the authorities. You wait for the police, the army, the doctors. But there are no authorities. The barracks of the Carabinieri have collapsed. The hospitals are ruins. The telegraph lines are severed. The railroad tracks are twisted like ribbons. Messina is gone. It's an island of pain, cut off from the rest of the world. For 12 hours, the survivors wander the ruins like ghosts. They are covered in that white lime dust, their clothes torn, many of them naked or wrapped in bedsheets. They are digging with their fingernails until their hands are bloody, trying to reach the voices beneath the stones. There is no water to drink. The aqueducts are broken. People are licking the moisture off the stones or drinking from the salty harbor. And then, on the horizon, smoke. It's not the smoke of the fires. It's the coal smoke of funnels. Out of the haze, three massive gray ships appear. They aren't Italian. They are the Imperial Russian Navy. The Baltic Fleet had been on maneuvers in the Mediterranean. They saw the horizon glow red the night before. They felt the shockwaves in their hulls. Without orders from the Tsar, without knowing exactly what they were sailing into, the Russian sailors steamed toward the smoke. They are the first to arrive. Imagine the sight of these sailors in their crisp white uniforms, jumping into the blood and the dust. They don't speak the language. They don't have heavy equipment. But they have shovels, and they have shoulders. They start to dig. They work until they drop from exhaustion. They carry the wounded onto their ships, turning their wardrooms into operating theaters. Soon, the British Royal Navy arrives, then the French, then the Americans. It is the first great international humanitarian effort of the modern age. In a decade that would eventually be defined by the carnage of World War I, here was a moment where the world's navies didn't come to kill, but to save. But even their help is a drop in the ocean of misery. The smell of the city begins to change. The sweet scent of bergamot is gone, replaced by the stench of the 80,000 dead rotting in the Sicilian sun. The fires burn for weeks. There are stories of incredible cruelty. Looters moving through the ruins, cutting fingers off corpses to get at gold rings. The Italian government eventually sends in 5,000 troops with orders to shoot looters on sight. Martial law is declared, but there are also stories of the miracles. A young girl is pulled from a pocket in the rubble after 11 days. She had survived on a single box of crackers and the moisture from a leaking pipe. When they lift her out, she isn't crying. She asks if it's still Monday. She doesn't realize that the world she knew, the people, the streets, the language of her neighborhood, has been extinct for over a week. What remains of Messina today? If you visit, you'll see a modern city. The streets are wide. The buildings are low and reinforced with concrete and steel. It's a city designed by fear. It's a city that knows the ground is a predator. But the ripple effect of December 28th goes deeper than architecture. This was the event that birthed modern seismology. Scientists from across the globe flocked to the ruins to study why some buildings stood and others turned to dust. They realized that it wasn't just the quake, it was the way we built. We were building for beauty, for height, for tradition, not for the reality of the earth. Every time you see a building code sign or hear about earthquake drills in schools from California to Tokyo, you are hearing the echo of Messina. We learned the hard way that firm ground is a choice we make in how we construct our world. But there's a more personal ripple, isn't there? It's that feeling you get when a heavy truck drives by your house and the windows rattle. For a split second, your heart skips. Your brain asks, is this it? Messina stripped away the illusion of permanence. It showed us that we are all just guests on a crust of cooling rock. It forces us to ask that question I posed at the beginning. How do we live when the foundation is an illusion? Maybe the answer isn't in the buildings. Maybe it's in the Russian sailors who didn't wait for orders. Maybe it's in the neighbors who dug until their fingers were bone. If the ground isn't solid, then the only thing that is each other. We are the firmament. Our willingness to reach into the dust for a stranger is the only thing that actually holds the world together. Before I go, I want to tell you about one last detail from that morning. In the ruins of the town hall, they found the city's official records. Most were destroyed, but one ledger was found open, protected by a fallen iron safe. It was the record of the local meteorological society. The last entry was made at 5 a.m., 20 minutes before the strike. It recorded the temperature, the wind speed, and the barometric pressure. And at the bottom, the clerk had written a single word in elegant, flowing script. Calmo. Calm. The world is always at its calmest right before it changes forever. Keep that in mind today. Value the ground beneath you, but hold on to the people beside you a little tighter. I'm Marcus Webb. This has been Rewind Daily. Tomorrow, we're heading to the freezing woods of 1944, where a single decision in the snow changed the course of a world war. See you tomorrow.